Patriot Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next.
Apparently, Josh Scobie has cursed the entire month of October. No points will be scored by any professional sports team in the city of Pittsburgh. Anybody else have Matthias Janmark for the game winner?
Antti Niemi.
I'm just glad the Penguins could do their part to help Antti Niemi get to his goal of winning the Hart Trophy.
Good God, what a frustrating night.
Forget the Hart Trophy. Not just the Hart Trophy guy. He's going to win the Art Ross. He's going to win the scoring title.
Two assists on top of the shutout, is that right?
That's right. I saw Bob Grove tweeted out in the middle of the second period that the last...
Hashtag free Bob Grove.
Right. The last goalie, the only goalie to get three assists in a game was Jeff Reamer from Calgary, was the only other goalie to get three assists.
No goalie ever had two and a shutout in the same game. That's an NHL first.
I certainly did not expect the Kessel addition to lead to a shutout in this direction in the opener. What the hell happened in Dallas last night?
Well, now I'm ready to start talking hockey. All right, kind of been on this rant for a couple days now. The hockey season has crept in here. I was not ready for the quick transition from baseball to hockey. I wanted a couple days of warm-up, ramp-up.
Guy said the same thing. I thought, Guy, maybe you weren't going to watch the game last night.
I didn't.
Yesterday. Oh, okay, there you go. Good for you.
No, not because I didn't want to. I mean, I saw the third period. We got this big black and gold primetime show coming up from San Diego, and I had to work, and I was editing my stories for that. So I had it on out the side of my eye, but I couldn't watch it like I'd like to.
Well, look at all the offense you missed.
Yeah.
Didn't miss much.
Yeah, see, the reason now I'm ready to go is the other part of the reason I didn't want to really dive into hockey is I was so skeptical that anything had changed. And now, after watching game one, I feel like nothing's changed. It's
really
so much the same.
37 shots on goal. Kessel has eight of them. They had a lot of great chances.
That's it.
They didn't have chances like that last year. They just went to sleep. They were getting outshot.
But another stand-on-your-head performance from the goalie.
Yeah.
It's always the goalie had the night of his life.
Well, he did stand on his head, though. I mean,
he was good.
They used
that
as an excuse last year for an average goalie performance, I thought. But he was out of his mind.
He was good. Partially, you got to criticize the Penguins for not burying chances. I mean, you got that kind of firepower.
Johnson complained about they didn't set up enough screens. It's when a guy's really on and seeing the puck as well as he was, then you got to start creating some traffic in front of him.
For all the talk of Kunitz is healthy, for all the talk of Plotnikov and Hornquist, those guys working it, they were supposed to be doing that. They were supposed to be getting in front of the net to make it harder for the goalie to have the night of his life.
Or how about hit the net? How about Bo Bennett when you're streaking down the right wing 90 seconds into the game? You actually, put one on net instead of ringing it off the backboards, which leads to the break and the, therefore, goal that gives Dallas the game winner from the immortal Matthias Janmark. Because, Daniel Sprong actually looked good to me for sections of this game.
Yeah, so let's sit him on the bench the whole third period.
Yeah, so let's do him one shift in the third.
What is the love affair with Bo Bennett? The guy cannot hit the net.
What is the point of keeping Sprong up if you're not going to play him in the third? In a game where you're trying to catch up and he's allegedly an offensive-oriented player. What's the point? Why are you doing it?
Agreed. Both salient points.
Well, my biggest beef, and I seem to like what I saw better than Tim because I thought they did have some good chances. You can't take careless not managing your stick penalties in the third period when you're down 2-0.
The Cole one was a bad break. I mean, he fell down. He was trying to make a play. He was trying to keep the body, and he fell down, and the stick came up.
Malkin screaming about, the follow-through on his shot. Regardless, they spent 6 minutes of the third period shorthanded, and you can't do that when you're down two goals.
Well, I'm sorry. One of them got negated kind of quickly, but they took four minor penalties in an attempt to catch up in the third. You can't do that.
That is a rule, though, right? You're not supposed to be penalized for a follow-through on a shot for a high stick. Is that true or false? That's what Johnston said after the game, and that's what I thought as well.
Two of the four that are in question.
Tockett was, the inadvertent stick as you're falling down, it may be a bad break. That's a penalty. You can't hit a guy in the face with the blade of your stick, whether you're falling down or not.
I guess. I mean, I don't mind them calling penalties because we'd be hypocritical because we've screamed about the lack of offense right. in the league and letting things go.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about them calling them. I'm complaining about them taking them. You've got to, you can't do it. Whatever the reason is, you lack of discipline, whatever.
But that being said, I wanted them to let the Ian Cole one go. You know what I mean? As I'm watching the game, not that I'm rooting for the Penguins, but just looking to see some flow in the third period and a possible comeback to make it an interesting game, and they called that. You know, you're right, guy. He's got to be in control. He's falling down. But do we really have to blow every little stick infraction and let other things go in the neutral zone that are more egregious?
That one, I mean, right, it was goal. Tyler Seguin, of all people, too, and it was so obvious. I think they had to call it. It was unfortunate the way it happened. It was just bad luck and a bad break. So I'm not going to.
It was like he was gushing blood. I mean, it grazed his visor as he was falling down, and Seguin did the old WWE move and four horsemen style and flopped backwards.
I mean, if we're going to go after the refs, I would rather go after the refs for those two calls about goaltender interference. You know, the one where Dumoulin,
which the Penguins benefited from.
Yeah, the one where Dumoulin got shoved in a flurry, that wasn't called. And the one that was much, much more minor that took away the Sharp goal was called, where Lovejoy got shoved into him. I mean, that one to me was borderline. The one where
I thought it was borderline goaltender interference, but it was blatant interference. You just can't walk in there and push him out of the way. You're not allowed.
Right.
And he doesn't have the puck.
And Airy made that point. So it was more of an interference than a goaltender interference.
But that one was more important from a Penguins standpoint to get because it negated the goal.
Took the goal off. But that first one where, I mean, the problem that I had with the first one being unchecked is that it really put the goaltender at risk. I mean, it really put Fleury at risk for significant injury.
Yeah.
And I did not predict a significant injury to the goaltender, only to one of the forwards. So
you already cursed Pascal Dupuis, so just pump the brakes on jinxing anybody else, will you? They missed Dupuis, though. I think that was evident last night. The third line, I didn't see much action from. I mean, granted, they were on the penalty kill a lot there at the end, but Bonino's line I didn't think was very active, and that's partly Dupuis-related.
Right, because Perron's on it. So if you have Perron, you're not going to be active. At least he made a body check at one point.
And yet they put him on the magical six or the top power play unit for a lot of the game. They keep forcing Perron up there.
Yeah, what'd you guys think of how they ended up throwing the power play out there? Because that was a point of discussion for me, too. What'd you guys think?
Well, they use two units now, right? So they're using Malkin on the second power play on the point. I thought it looked good. I thought they generated some chances. They just...
I thought the first
any.
Power play in particular did a nice job of keeping the puck in the zone and applying pressure. So from that standpoint, I thought it was executed well. Actually, I agree with Johnston when he said that the first two power plays he thought were pretty decent. And I thought he's right to say that. But the way they've split up the personnel to me is more of an issue. I don't understand why Plotnikov and Hornquist are on the same unit together. I know they're wingmates, line
kind of like the same player from the
same
what we've
player.
Seen.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. They're the same player. I don't understand why they've got them both instead of one of those guys being on the ice with the other power play, particularly because Kessel's on that power play. And Kessel's the one that's supposed to be getting off all the shots, so have your best guys in front of the net to pick up the crap and scoop it in. For as hard
were,
as
were you encouraged by Kessel a little bit, though? I mean, he's very active at eight shots, had some great opportunities.
I was, I was.
Him, not Plotnikov, though. I didn't find him to be very impactful.
No, Plotnikov, for as well as I thought he played in the preseason, was rather absent, I thought, last night. You did not hear his name called at all.
I thought Kunitz played well.
Kunitz was active. Now, the thing with Kunitz being on that first power play, though, guy, for as much as he tries to be that net front presence guy, and for much as he tries to incorporate that into his game, he's not big enough to do it. I mean, he's not big enough to be a screener for the goalie, and he always gets – this was talked about even in the second period with Potash's interview. It's been a recurring theme ever since he's been their only net front presence guy. He tries to get so close that the rebounds get beyond him, and he can't reach him. And you saw – couple examples of that again last night.
Penguins lose 3-0. Give us your impressions of the season opener in Dallas at American Airlines Arena. Sports talk at tribweb.com.
But do you agree with that, Ken?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't mind breaking Sid and Gino up.
Like, no, that part
don't
I don't.
Problem with
No, because I'm so sick of them trying to be in the right circle together.
And I think Kessel was good. I think he'll be good at the left half wall.
Fine.
That's
great.
You know, and Sid fed him once there on the first opportunity.
And it looks like Sprong likes to be there on the second power play. So I get all that. The thing I don't get is why don't you have one of your best net front presence guys The reason you got this guy from Russia, the reason that you traded for Hornquist, why don't you have one of those two guys on the first unit where the guy that shoots the best and shoots the most, Phil Kessel, is there?
Well, they had Kunitz on there, and that's who they think is the net front guy, right? And maybe he shouldn't
That's
be.
What I'm saying, is that they have Kunitz there, and he tries his best to be that guy, but you
but
have two more natural guys at it, so why not have one of them there? And if you want to keep Kunitz with Sid and Kessel, fine, yeah. So be it. Then take Perron off the first unit and put him on the second unit.
Right, just keep Perron off both units. I mean,
that'd be fine with me, too.
And the penalty kill was bad. I mean, they allowed a goal in a rush, and Malkin was out there and got blown past.
Well, you know what? I mean, I thought they killed two penalties in the third period and actually got some momentum off them and then took them another one immediately. The last one, that's what I mean about taking penalties. You're piling up, especially when you take that many in a period. Anytime you got to kill more than one or maybe two in a period, you're exhausting your penalty killers. But I thought they did a nice job and actually took over the momentum of the game early in the third period killing.
Well, when I went on my opening rant there about more of the same, a lot of more of the same to me was another goalie has the night of his life. Again, the power play comes up empty despite all the talent.
Another pitcher has the day of his life or night of his life in the playoffs?
Precisely. But the hockey-related item that bothered me was, when it comes to more of the same on the defensive end, is the ease with which the Stars gained the blue line. Alex Hemsky had an easier time gaining the blue line than Jake Arrieta had with Pedro Alvarez.
Yeah, you can't start playing defense in
Pedro
your own
had
zone.
Good at bats. I'm going to stick by that despite 0-3 with 3 Ks.
Don't challenge my analogy, Ken. I thought
if you would have gone Marte, I would have agreed with you.
All right, Starling Marte. It's easier at bats than Starling Marte. But you saw what I'm talking about, right? Hemsky,
yes.
Just every time he had the puck, that first goal, Dumoulin just backed up and backed up and backed up and gave Hemsky all the room in the world. And he fed a nice pass, and Fleury couldn't get over on time, and it went under his pads when it was redirected by, what was his name again? Janmark, right?
Janmark. Matthias Janmark in his first shift in the National Hockey League.
And then
he's going to be the next Lemieux. First shift, first goal.
That's what I was thinking.
And then on the rush, same thing. Easily gained the zone on the power play to make it 2-0.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if part of that is because I feared the Penguins' D was going to get shelled last night. They didn't really. That wasn't really the story of the game, but maybe the way they played, because they feared the same thing, and therefore allowed too much room for their forwards to get in the zone, Tim. Like things, they got like beat on some stretch passes too. But
yeah,
maybe they were so panicked about this.
Think about this though: the reason that team hasn't been a playoff contender for years has been defense and goaltending. They beefed up both in this offseason and might be a bit of a factor this year. They were the second highest scoring team in the NHL last year. So to hold them to one full strength goal, I don't think is a terrible night's work for your defense. If the penalty killing is better or you're a little less careless taking penalties, if they would have lost that game 1-2, it's still a loss. But I didn't think it was that was the thing I was the most anxious to see. I mean, the goals are going to come, I think. But I wanted to see how they played defensively because I think we're all fearing a train wreck there, and I don't really think it was.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Dumoulin played some major minutes, and he came through fine, if that was one of the guys you were worried about.
Not in that first goal. He's got a
was
step.
He part of the first goal?
Well,
he was backing in. That's
yeah,
right.
He was the one that just
he allowed
gave
Hemsky
the blue
to go
line
wide.
Away to Hemsky.
Who, Letang?
No. Dumoulin.
Dumoulin. Yeah, Perron was the guy who couldn't tie up Janmark on the back
right,
check.
Right,
On the second goal, Scuderi, it was on the PK. He was kind of used as a screen there, but that was just a nice shot. And then the third goal was off a faceoff. Sid lost it. I mean, Jamie Benn, is there a more quiet Art Ross winner in league history?
You know, it's because of where he plays, I think. More than
I guess,
anything.
Is he really that good? I mean, on
yeah,
that shift,
good.
He looked good.
I've always liked Benn. I liked Benn 2 years before he won the scoring title.
I guess I just didn't watch him or know about him. I mean, he was not a high pick, right? He was like a 200th pick in the draft or something, and he only had 87 points or something last year. It was not like he set the world on fire, but then again, in this league, that was setting the world on fire. But that third goal, he dusted Sid, won the draw, went straight to the net, and nobody did a thing about it. He just stood there right in front of Fleury.
Sid didn't have a shot on goal. How does a team get 37 shots on goal and he doesn't have one of them? How's that happen?
Overpassing to Kessel, I guess, which he did get 6 shots. Kessel took 6 that hit the net, 3 that were blocked, and 4 that missed.
He was drafted 129th overall, Ben.
129th. That's a great story. I mean,
His brother, who plays for them, wasn't drafted at all, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he doesn't look that spectacular in his skill set. It's not like he's got a... I mean, like Sagan, I fear more. Maybe Sagan helps him become the player he is now.
In a shortened season, he had 33 points in those 41 games. You know, he was always kind of in that mid-30s to low 40s before last year he busted out and got 87 points. But, yeah, I mean, I remember it was either the lockout season or right before the lockout, I thought to myself, this is a guy who's kind of on the come. And he's always been good for them.
Well, back to the Penguins' D, which, again, I don't think it's a major story, but of all the issues last night, do you come away thinking the defense will be a problem? Like, I think, Guy, you're right, though, we'll score eventually, especially the top line. But how about the D? Like, are you worried about Scuderi? Is he getting to Gonchar level? Is the rest of the group going to be okay?
Well, Guy's right. I don't think the defense was a train wreck, but the issue with the defense is I think you saw what is going to be average for that defense. You're going to see two moments where they just look like they're going to be overwhelmed by the other team's top forwards. You know, Hemsky's going to gain the zone. Ben's going to be unmolested in front of the net. That's going to happen 2 to 3, 4 times a game. And if Fleury can't bail them out, they're going to have to score to overcome those deficiencies. You know, so maybe I should rephrase. That's going to happen 8 times a game. And 3 to 4 times, they're going to wind up being goals.
Like, Letang was awesome. He played 28 minutes. I mean, if he can stay healthy, you don't worry about him, right? That's the one guy I have no concerns about.
I worry about him staying healthy. I don't worry about him being good when he plays anymore.
Right.
So, the first goal, he kind of backed in too much and didn't and allowed that to be scored. I believe it was the first goal because I watched the postgame show. Like I said, I missed the first two periods. I don't think he's ever going to be a great defensive defenseman. But that's okay. I mean, you know, he's a great player. He's just a different kind of player. But
he can recover with his speed, right? And not in terms of elite, like a Suter or a, you know, some of those guys that the Predators have. But he I don't worry about. Mata looked good, like looked healthy, right? Just the first look at Olli Mata, 16 minutes, 42 seconds. He was moving fine. You got a good duo there. The rest of them, they're just eh. You know, can Ian Cole really play 22 minutes a night for you and not burn you? Lovejoy didn't really show up either way. I guess he was fine. And then, you know, Dumoulin and who's the last guy? Scuderi, who played 18 minutes last night.
The one moment for Scuderi last night, he just fell down as he was skating. But luckily, the Penguins gained possession and it didn't matter.
Yeah, and Sprong, it is a good question. I mean, he played 8 minutes through the first two periods. He played 1 minute in the third period. We're on the PK a lot. One shift in the third period? Why even bother?
That's my point. That's what I said. Why are you doing this? Why are you having this experiment with him if you're not going to bother using him in a situation where, as an offensive player, you want him out there to help you catch up from a three-goal deficit in the third period?
Time to get Gonchar back and dress him as my specialty seventh forward or seventh defenseman.
Well, apparently, I don't know if you saw the broadcast last night and the early portions of it. I guess he was talking to Gino and Sig quite a bit before the game started. He was there because, you know, it's Dallas. He's still living there, I guess. And the Penguins are talking to him about creating some sort of front office position for him or coaching position for him, which is exactly what we predicted, right? Might be the case, unless he comes back and actually looks capable on the ice, which he most assuredly did not, then he would wind up in some glamorized tutorial position for Gino and Plotnikov, and you would think the guys in the power play.
Get to some email here. Mike Johnston spoke after the game about the penalties they took in the third period. Here's what Johnston had to say. He was not absolving his guys completely, although he did complain a bit about the Gino shot follow-through.
Yeah, I'd have to take a look at those penalties again. And I thought Gino was actually shooting. And when you're in the act of shooting, if their follow-through clips a guy, then it shouldn't be a penalty. I'm not sure about Cullens. I didn't see it. And then I saw Coles. They were tangled up on the ice. And we got the call there. But regardless, our penalty kill has to be better. There were two power play goals in the game. That was really key. And so we can't, number one, we can't take those penalties. And two, our penalty kill has to be better.
Mike, how much of the inability to score tonight was Niemi, and how much was you guys simply not finishing?
I think a little bit of both. I thought he was really on his game. He didn't leave a lot of loose rebounds there. First period, I thought we got to the net better than we did in the second period. You have to get a flat screen. You have to get a hard screen on him. And then you've got to have guys around that net area. We missed a few great chances. We missed a couple really good looks on the power play. I thought our first power play and our second power play were strong, and we just couldn't capitalize. That would have given us, at the 1-0 game, would have given us lots of momentum at that time.
Mike, Phil had a lot of good looks tonight. Are you encouraged just by the number of opportunities that were created for him?
Yeah, I thought that line had quite a few good chances. Actually, Cooney had probably three or four really good chances tonight from shots from the outside lane, which were cross-ice passes. So as I thought they generated, that's for sure. I thought Gino had a couple, Bo Bennett. So we had a few, but anytime you're playing against a goaltender, which is in his zone like that, you've got to get a screen. You've got to have hard goals right around the crease area, and they've got to be tough screens.
What's the thought process between separating Sid and Gino on the power play? Will you think about going back to that?
Well, based on tonight, I really thought that both units generated quite a bit. So we've got two dangerous units there. As what happened, where Gino's line was on the ice when the first power play happened. They were tired, so Sid's line went out on the ice for the power play. And then I thought once they were out there, Gino's line came back out and gave us a 1-2 punch on the power play. So we have the flexibility, we can do either. And I really liked the look, so, that we had on the power play.
Mike Johnson, Penguins head coach, here on the Morning Sports Report. Ken Laird, Guy Junker, Tim Benz, all brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand and Duffy's Beer. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say he got, like, out-coached by Lindy Ruff, but there are times I look to him on the bench, he and talking, and I wonder if they have the right answers. So are we going to be hearing Antti Niemi was on his game Saturday?
I said that since the first time I ever saw the guy, and I think maybe it's unfair, but he does have this look of bewilderment a lot.
Yeah.
You know,
for a team that gives up that many goals, he looks so surprised when they happen.
Right. And Antti Niemi was on his game, but like you said, Tim, Mike Smith on his game Saturday for Arizona when we come out of that,
yeah,
or Anders,
sure,
Lindbach or,
yep,
whoever.
They're all going to be on their game. Boy, had the game
Anders
of their
Lindbach
life.
Lindbach was on his game tonight. We, you know. Got to get that net front presence, though.
I'm watching this first goal again, and you know, Letang was not on the ice. It was Dumoulin and Scuderi was the defensive pair at the time. And just,
but
the,
look at Perron, too, getting just
the ease
doused
with which they give up the blue line is just fascinating.
SportsTalkAndTripWeb.com. Scott in Arkansas, the hockey hotbed of Arkansas, checks
renowned
in first today.
Renowned.
Only one game, guys. No need to overreact, but I did see similar problems to last year. The offensive system generates shots, but very few of them are quality. Kessel had a few good shots, but for the most part, he was firing the puck from low percentage, 10 feet away areas. Despite the presence of guys who can maintain possession in the O zone, like Crosby and Malkin, little to no offensive zone cycling. It's one shot and done.
Did you hear the stat that Airy gave last night about Kessel? He did not score a slap shot goal the entire year last
year.
Yeah,
that is stunning. Mm.
Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah. Every goal he scored was on a wrist shot. He didn't have a single slap shot. Phil Kessel. Really?
I guess that doesn't matter as long as he's getting rid of it. That's his MO. Most of his goals were in tight, though, right? They were all...
Well, it matters in the sense if we're praising what he's doing on the power play and he's, you know, along the half wall and he's going to be firing from that distance. And like that emailer just said, if he's looking for shots from 10 feet out and just whining and firing, if he's, that's not part of his game, which I always, I guess, blindly assume that it was, then
I don't think it matters. His wrist shot is so good. I think a slap shot would, he has a better chance of scoring on a wrist shot from almost anywhere other than just inside the blue line.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. I don't think it's a huge
slap
deal,
shot. I used to yell at the kids I coach to take slap shots from everywhere. It's the most inaccurate shot there is. And I mean, you know, not at that level anyway, but
that's the Golden State Warrior plan, Tim. He won't hurt his shoulder that way.
Oh, is that it? Okay. That's why he's so durable. He never takes slap shots.
Yeah, never misses a game. That and the hot dogs. Scott also says, random out there prediction, lack of offense despite talent will cost Mike Johnston his job before season's end. Not saying that's out of the realm of possibility at all.
I'm not either.
No, hey, they would have missed the playoffs last year, which they barely squeaked in. He probably wouldn't have made it to October this year.
I wasn't 100% sure he was going to stick around in the first place.
Scott also says, P.S. Scuderi sucks. I'd rather lose with inexperience than inability to play the youngsters. Let's see how it goes, because there is a fear you're too young and you just get embarrassed because you have guys that have never played in the league, and Scuderi does have experience that might help them from some games early on this year. Matt says, at least we can listen to a coach actually talk now. Johnston, unlike the other two Pittsburgh coaches, doesn't spew platitudes. Niemi is Niemi. I don't know what that means, but anyway. The other two Pittsburgh coaches, like Hurdle and Tomlin, spewing BS and platitudes.
I think what he's trying to say there is Niemi is Niemi, and he might have had a typo in there the second time.
Okay.
Kind of like Foles is Foles. Niemi
Foles
is
Foles. Oh, Niemi is Niemi. I see.
Come on, Ken. Keep up with the emailer here.
Oh, that's good.
Very good.
Niemi is
you
Niemi.
You ruined a very witty
email.
Well,
he misspelled it. It's I-N-E-M-E.
All right, I want to know, when you text or tweet and you have a misspelling, do you go back and correct it or do you just leave it go?
Are you talking about Twitter?
Like delete the tweet?
This is very important, guy. Yeah.
I just want to know.
Twitter protocol is going to bark up your tree here. And Twitter protocol is whoever happens to be offended in whatever direction. If you do something like that, you'll get five people complaining that you should correct the tweet. Then you'll get five people complaining that it's against protocol to delete the tweet. And once you put it up there, you should just leave it up there.
Oh, I don't mean about that. It drives me crazy when I get text, especially, that have all kind of spelling mistakes, and I got to decipher what it is. And this is a lot from my wife because she speaks her texts.
You're instead of you are?
Or even just if, like what you just read there. If it had one extra letter in it before you send it, go back and take the letter out so that you don't have to decipher it. I'm just asking what you got because a lot of people don't give a crap.
I never have a misspelling in my tweets.
See, again, this is like when he sounds like my mom. I told you he does that sometimes. That's one of those examples right there.
My wife sent a text to my daughter up at Penn State or something about, are you going to be late? Or I forget what it was when she did her voice. And the text was sent, are you going to get laid?
Oh,
that's it. And my daughter sends back like, !! My wife read it. She goes, ah! I think you should correct
point taken,
the mistakes.
Take your time. Have some pride in your work before you click send.
Mom,
that's what I
right
say.
There. That's what, have some pride
Matt,
in your work.
Emailer Matt.
Well, that's a much better response. You should be happy, guy. I mean, that's a much better response from your daughter than, hell yeah.
Already did three times
well,
this week, Mom.
After
thanks.
The question mark, it was, it's Friday, isn't it?
Mom, right. What do you mean, gonna?
Yoy. Brad emails, Tim, I agree with you. Nothing has changed. Another game where the goalie steals the show.
Oh, please, nothing has changed. Tim didn't say nothing. It's one game. Please don't say nothing has changed after 60 minutes of hockey in which they outshot the other team by double digits and the goalie pulled stuff out of his ass all night, including saves he didn't even see.
It wasn't so much
nothing. Maybe nothing has changed, but do not make that judgment after 60 minutes of hockey.
It wasn't nothing has changed. There's just very familiar complaints coming out from, what we have seen in recent years. They're very, very familiar themes that were still present.
Too many one-timers, Brad says, near the circle, not enough going to the net, undisciplined play, same old, same old. Through one game. Brian M., here's my three takes. Number one, giving up two on ones all night long. That's true. That could have been worse. Point two from Brian, constantly being Letang deep in the offensive zone. I guess that's, if you're going to complain about not scoring, hard to complain about Letang jumping into the play, too.
Was he talking about the third period or the first period? Because the third period, he's kind of got to be if that's the case. He did do a great job breaking up one of those two-on-ones the emailer brings up.
Sagan.
No, it was Ben.
Okay.
Yeah, Jamie Benn.
Third take, I know.
Unless there's another one I missed, there might have been. You might be right, Ken. There might have been a second two-on-one that I didn't write down. But I wrote down one in particular. He did a great job against Jamie Benn to prevent him getting a clean shot off.
Brian's third take, I thought Malkin was flying. His line mates couldn't keep up with him. Which gets back to the Plotnikov experiment. Scott W. says, Malkin thrived with a sniper like James Neal on his line. Having Hornquist and Plotnikov is puzzling to me. Why not give him a shooter? If not Kessel, fine, but what about Daniel Sprong? This guy has speed, shoots first, and doesn't suffer from the overpassing gene this team has in abundance.
Something to keep an eye on, especially if things don't work out well with Plotnikov and he winds up in the third or fourth line. Yeah, that's something to keep an eye on, but how can you tell, again, if he's got his ass nailed to the bench for all but one shift?
What did he play, 30 seconds, 28 seconds in the third period? That was it? One short shift?
That was it.
That's amazing. Was he being punished? I mean, is that punishment?
I think he just panicked and shortened the bench and didn't want to let a young guy go out there.
You shorten the bench by having Cullen stay on the bench. You shorten the bench by...
I don't know how you punish him. I didn't see him do anything.
Wrong. I don't know what he did that was so egregious. I have to go back and think. Go back and watch the replay on NHL.com or something, but I don't remember anything that stood out to me that was over the top bad from the kid. And you're keeping him up here to look at him. So look at him. Don't look at him sitting on the bench.
Well, let's wait till Phoenix. Niemi was Niemi.
Have some pride in your work.
Niemi was Niemi.
Niemi was Niemi. Derek emails. Here I was this morning putting on my shoes, looking forward to getting to work on a Friday and listening to your show, and then it hit me, it's Friday, Rossi's going to be on. No, it's not Derek, he came on yesterday, so you're clean. But Derek says, and the Penguins lost, can't wait for Rossi to say they're going to go 0-82, how he was right about them last year.
I was thinking about him last night when the third goal went in, I thought, Rob's non-playoff prediction looks pretty good right now.
Rob's going to
Let's make a whole 82-game judgment based on 60 minutes.
Rob's going to put on a lot of weight with all the steaks he's going to eat from all these bets he's going to win.
Derek says, let's not forget how the Pens roster was decimated by injuries, but that wouldn't fit Rob's narrative, and how the organization is awful, Rossi keeps saying. You won't get that, Derek, because we had Rossi on for a Thursday fix this week.
But he did piss off somebody to the point that I was in this Twitter spat with a guy right before face-off last night, actually still about Rob's Cole column, his Garrett Cole column.
Yeah, people were hot about that.
He's demanding that the Pirates rip Rob's credentials because he wrote something negative about Garrett Cole.
I don't really see where he was out of line on it. He was very hard on Cole, but I think we all had our expectations built up for Garrett Cole to the point where we expected better. That said, David Price got rocked yesterday for Toronto. So when I saw that, I did think, maybe we were a little too hard on Cole. If David Price is getting rocked, I mean, anybody can.
David Price has lost 5 straight postseason games. First pitcher in history to have that happen. And by the way, I wanted to bring this up. At some point we talked about baseball. 2 more visiting teams won. God, and this happens every year, and it happens in hockey in the playoffs, and yet I sit here, and I'm agonizing last week over them hanging on to the home field advantage. I mean, part of that was personal because it was going to make me have a travel nightmare week, possibly Chicago, St. Louis, and San Diego in a 4-day span. But what the hell good is home field advantage? It means nothing.
Ken, go back to what you said.
That goes back to my meaningless September baseball. I've been saying that for a month.
Well, it goes back to my meaningless of life, but you still have to live it too if you stop breathing.
That's just because you're doing a show with me and Tim. But
well, go back to what you said about Cole, because when you say we were too hard on him, in what sense? Are you including Rob in that?
Or? Yes, including Rob. Mostly Rob.
Okay, mostly Rob was too hard. I don't think Rob was let me rephrase. I would not put the whole loss on Cole. I would have to go back and read Rob's column to see if he put it all on Cole. But he wasn't good. That was a bad start.
It was a bad start.
So, well, how are we being too hard?
He got beat by a rookie. Putting a whole loss on him, I think, in essence.
Okay, well, is anybody doing that?
I think Rob did. I think Rob wrote the preemptive column that there's nothing to worry about. We got Garrett Cole on our side. This guy's an ace. And then when he didn't come through to his expectation, he took it out on him in a way.
I don't think there's any problem calling out a guy who is perceived to be an ace for having a performance that was that poor and substandard.
I mean, it was a 4-run performance. That's not the worst.
Well, somebody criticizes the president in a political column. Should their credentials be pulled for?
No.
I mean,
well,
what country do we live in here?
That's what
you're
going
to pull your credentials because you're overly harsh criticizing somebody?
That's what I said to the guy.
The Pirates would have pulled several credentials over the years if they could have.
There'd be nobody in the press box.
It'd be the Asian kids there covering Jung Ho Gung, and that'd be it.
You remember they refused to give Madden any guests when we were at ESPN?
Yes,
They wouldn't give
him
any guests.
I do remember that.
You're not getting any guests until he plays nice. You know, that's the way they operated for 20 years.
That's right. They're going to rip the credentials and then have the team sold to Putin. But forget the credential thing for just a second. I don't think, just in theory, there's nothing wrong with putting the vice on Garrett Cole a bit after that game. And by a bit, I mean say, hey, you're largely responsible for this. They're right. He gave up 4 earned runs in 5 innings for an ace. That's a Jeff Locke performance.
Yeah, Cole. I mean, Rossi also said some nice things about Cole, which get lost in this, that He might become an ace. He probably will. He's 25. He'll be great. He's
losing a playoff
pitcher.
Game doesn't mean you're not an. He won 19 games. How many pitchers in Pirate history have won 19 games in a season?
Well, this gets into your definition of ace, because I think Rossi's right that he's not an ace. If you want to go, who are the best five pitchers in baseball? If there's only five aces on the planet, then he's not there, right?
See, I think every staff has an ace. It's your best pitcher. It's the guy you rely on to go out and break a four-game losing streak. I mean, I think a guy that went 19-8 can be an ace. People are going to lose postseason games. You have an ace against an ace almost all the time in the first game of a series in the postseason, and one of them's got to lose. So does that guy mean that the guy's not one of the top five pitchers in baseball?
I don't think Cole is one of the top five. Would you put him top five?
No. I'd probably put him top 10.
Yeah, I'd say he's got to be in that conversation. I mean, Arrieta, Kershaw, David Price, Scherzer, Chris Sale,
right.
Yep. Keuchel, maybe, who we just saw win. I don't know.
Felix Hernandez?
Yeah. Maybe he had a down year. I don't know.
Yeah.
Baumgartner.
So we haven't struggled here to come up with five better, have we?
In the last
10 seconds.
Now, when you get into tens, probably Cole, yeah. You're probably getting into Cole and DeGrom and the Betts guys and, I don't know, Cueto.
He's second in the league in wins. He's fifth in the league in earned run average.
Scherzer.
So that's top five in two statistical important categories.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. Yeah. I don't think there are 30
He has as
aces.
Many postseason wins as Jake Arrieta in his career. They've each won once.
So, I mean, for Rossi to say Gerrit Cole is not an ace, does that upset some Pirates fans? I think that's what got people hot. One game, one performance, but I don't really disagree with him. Again, it depends how you parse it.
I mean, they relied on him. He had four wins against playoff teams in September when they were fighting for their position. Those were huge games. That's ace material.
Yeah, I think we've become way too literal in trying to determine what the definition of ace is.
Yeah, that's like,
I mean, to me,
who's an MVP?
Ace is your top starter. Like, who is your top starter? Who do you go to in a big game? Who do you lean on in a big situation? And it's not always the playoffs. I think Gerrit Cole is an ace, and as an ace, he let everybody down with that performance.
Yeah, if he's not an ace, then what did he do wrong?
The same level of criticism can be given to him whether you say he's not an ace or he didn't come up with an ace performance because he didn't do his job.
Right.
Your job is to be the ace, and your job is to go out there and, if not, match Arrieta pitch for pitch. When you leave the game, make sure it's 2-1 then at that point.
He's just Kershaw. He's an ace who had a bad game in the playoffs.
Well, you could call him. I mean, Kershaw's been notoriously terrible in the postseason.
That's what I'm saying.
Is Kershaw an ace? Is Kershaw an ace?
Maybe
yes,
only not because you have Greinke, too.
No, but he is.
You know,
maybe Liriano's an ace. A lot of people would say Liriano's numbers.
Well, who was better in September, Gerrit Cole or Liriano?
Well, Liriano had a couple clunkers, didn't he?
Yes, that's my point. Gerrit Cole
was 4-0 in September and five starts.
Okay.
Right?
But not like Liriano was bad. I mean, when he was on, he was dominant. He was wipeout stuff.
I don't have near the faith in him that I do in Cole.
Email sportssoccertripweb.com. Mark B. says,
I think the very fact that he is their ace and disappointed is the whole reason for Rob's column. So, I mean, my only argument is saying that he's not an ace. He is an ace, and that's why it was so disappointing.
Yeah, since we've gone down this analogy path so many different times in the past few weeks, comparing this current team to the 90s teams, was Barry Bonds not an MVP? Barry Bonds was an MVP who didn't do his job in the postseason. Gerrit Cole was an ace who didn't pitch like an ace in the postseason. That doesn't mean you're
Barry.
Not...
How's that one resonate?
Huh?
Barry was an MVP. Just because Guy hates Barry with a passion, I don't even know if he'll give him Barry was an ace or an MVP.
Oh, sure he was.
Was Barry? Do you think
Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before he started using steroids?
Right.
He used steroids?
Yeah, like we just determined all of the clear that was left over was on Jake Arrieta's arm. That's why it was so shiny.
Flaxseed oil. Gomez. Mark says, I think the Pirates need to sign Hap. They got a bunch of people to replace, but I think they won't go get a great pitcher. Instead, they'll get a cheap one and hope Searidge can fix him. But if they get rid of Pedro or Walker, they better go out and get the best available guy and make a trade. At what point are they exposed to win the division and get to the NLCS?
Hey, I'd feel pretty good if their rotation next year is Cole, Liriano, Hap, Morton and one of the young rookies. Guys, Tyone or Kingham or probably Glasnow. Most likely Glasnow.
Mm-hmm.
No, I understand that email. The question becomes, what is Ray Searidge's job that he will be entrusted to do? Because does he work his wizardry,
miracle worker,
on pitcher X that comes from another team, as he has done with Volquez, as he
most
did
likely
with
the
Liriano,
American League, right?
As he did with Happ, as he did with Burnett twice. I mean, that's what Ray Searidge might be entrusted to do. If he's not entrusted to do that, it might be entrusted to fix Morton and Locke for a longer term, because he has at times gotten those guys right, gotten those guys on the hill to be productive, competitive pitchers, and then the fixes don't stay. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got to go back and do it repeatedly. Can he fix them for an entire season without having to reboot constantly with them? He's got to do one of those two jobs. They will entrust him to do one of those two jobs next year.
All right, I'm looking at the I'm eliminating National League free agent pitchers. I'm just going to the American League because that's where he goes, right? They get A.J. Burnett. They get Liriano. They get Jay Happ. They get guys in a new
Volquez.
League. Yeah. So there's I mean, there are quite a few of those American League-type pitchers that are out there that could come over and help them. Actually, you know, a lot of these guys are National League guys, like Alfredo Simon? An older guy. What age range? Because Hap's 33. That's interesting, too. Like, Beer Temple was on yesterday, guy, and he said he thinks they're going to offer him 2 years, $25 million, Hap, with an option for a third year. He thinks there's a good chance they're going to make him a priority. That sound reasonable to you, term-wise?
Yeah, the two guys after you left, guy, that Rob brought up that we had kicked around that are probably being reevaluated to stay as opposed to go are Walker and Hap.
Hmm.
Because he thinks that the gung injury has been a game changer.
To keep Walker,
potentially.
By today's standards, a third year makes me nervous for a pitcher. How many 36-year-old pitchers are still effective? I think more often than not, people don't. Like I said yesterday, I think it's one of the smartest things Tim ever said. No, I didn't mean it that way.
You say that, and then you say something that to me sounds marginal, I'm like, what the hell have I been doing for the last 13 years?
No, but I don't think it's thought of enough when you're talking about the Pirates and spending money, and that it's not always what's up front that counts. It's what's at the end that counts. What did people bitch about more than anything in the last 20 years? Jason Kendall's contract. If they would not have signed Jason Kendall to that contract, moving into a new ballpark,
oh,
who at that time was the face of their franchise, they wouldn't have had people come out even to see the new ballpark. They would have burned the place down before it opened. They had to. And then as soon as they did, and as soon as he got on real grass and all those ground balls that got through or that he beat out for hits, and his average dropped 25 points, what the hell did they sign him to a long-term deal for? Well, if you want to see what they have been able to build crumble in a hurry, start having a bunch of 35-year-old overpaid guys around who aren't performing that you still have to pay. Mm. Walt Terrell pitching for three other teams after he leaves here, and the Pirates are still paying him the bulk of his salary. That's the kind of stuff that kills you for a decade. So I think $25 million for 2 years is very reasonable for what he did. And now the other thing is, you know, it's a very small sample size, too. You can't overpay for 5 or 6 weeks worth of work that really hasn't shown up for, you know.
Right, you're giving him Liriano money for 6 months.
He's had several years of mediocrity and several weeks of excellence. You figure that whatever he had going on was corrected by the Pirates' pitching gurus, but there's no automatic that he doesn't isn't a 500 pitcher again next year. Now you've spent $25 million for another Charlie Morton.
I've got their guy, 100%. Here's their free agent pitcher, Bud Norris. Bud Norris, 2-9 this year with Baltimore with a 7 ERA, then went to San Diego and was 1-2 with an ERA over 5. They liked him 2 years ago. They're going hard after Bud Norris. Come on.
But no, he's a guy,
that's their
though,
pitcher.
Bud Norris, that spent a lot of time in the National League because he was also with Houston before San Diego. So if you're using that as an elimination, he does have a long history in the NL.
I think they might overlook that just because they tried to trade for him a couple of years ago.
What, when he was 15-8?
Yeah.
Wasn't he? He was very central in the hacking scandal, wasn't he?
Was he?
There's something about Bud Norris that was very much
in the Astros Cardinals thing.
In the Astros Cardinals thing, it was something about they. Bud Norris was being dangled out there in a trade, and we don't think he's all that good anyways.
Oh, I think that was Pirate related, actually. I think we were looking, because that's at the time they were trying to trade for him. And
that might be it. Yeah.
So the Cardinals knew that.
Yeah.
And so that was part of the discussion. All right. Well, and those are the type of guys that are out there. The Wei-Yin Chens, the Chad Billingsleys. I don't know.
You've gambled on a guy that you brought in here and thought you could fix, and you fixed him. Mm-hmm. Now, is he too expensive, or would you rather gamble on another guy and hope you can do it again? I mean, the percentages of having another guy come in and pitch the way Hap did are slim. I think you have a much greater chance of bringing him back and having him. You know, he's not going to repeat what he did. He was virtually unhittable for most of that time. Other than the first game that he pitched here. But even if that flattens out a little bit, if the guy wins 12, 13 games for you.
JBL Morning Show, Junker, Benz, and Laird, brought to you by Duffy's Beer on 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER, and all their weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Jason from the Rumbunter says, the most alarming thing from Beer Temple's appearance, guys, was his lack of faith that Melanson would be back. I'm sure Watson could step in, but who steps in for him? Do you trust Hughes in a regular capacity? Not me. Bullpen was their best weapon this year and could be muted next year.
Soria, guy who's closed and had 35 saves or so, and I think that was his high in saves.
If they'll pay him, $5 million, maybe would he take it?
Melanson?
1 year, $5 million. No, Soria.
Oh, Soria. I don't know.
Be your setup guy?
Maybe. That'd be a step down for him, right? Is that right where he is? What'd you find yesterday, Josh?
He was at 7 or 8, I think.
Did you say 7 or for Soria yesterday, salary-wise? 7. Yeah, it'd be a step down for him. And by the way, just to go back to Hap and Bud Norris, to your point before, Ken, Hap was in the NL for a long time, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that's true.
He was in Toronto and Seattle, sure, for the last 3 years. But prior to that, he was born and bred in the National League. I mean,
that's right. As long as they spend some time in the American League just to get out of sight, out of mind, then they'll bring him back. Scott and Wexford. Back to the Pens, guys. You can't play Perron and Bennett at the same time. I mean, in the same game, let alone on the same line. These are likely two of the worst first-round cost players of the last 20 years. If you're not going to put Daniel Sprong on the top two or maybe three lines, just send him back to juniors. Behind Kessel and maybe Malkin, he's got the most lively shot, and I'd move Plotnikov down the lines 3 or 4. They looked lost defensively too many times last night as well.
I'm not ready to scrap that Plotnikov experiment yet.
I liked a lot of what I saw him in the preseason. Yeah. He didn't play that well last night, but as I said, we do this all the time. The Steelers play one game, and if there's any sport where you can judge more on one game, it is football. We do this at the Pirate Opener. They have the opening, they play their opening game, and we want to make judgments on why a guy can't bat sixth.
That's the fun of the opening game, though. I like that overreaction.
I hate it. Nobody else overreacts more than you.
Nobody reacts accurately more than I do.
Oh yeah.
Pick and poor champion two times over. Brendan.
That's not reaction. Emails. That's prediction. That's actually the exact opposite.
React to what I'm seeing and therefore predicting the future those reactions. Like, what are we doing today? We're reacting to last night's game and predicting the future for the Penguins.
Take some
silence.
Time in your work.
I'll accept that silence as defeat on your part.
No, it's just disgust, not defeat.
Brendan emails. The first goal was entirely Dumoulin's fault, guys. You can't let a player of Hemsky's caliber skate into the zone like that. You got to step up on your man in the NHL. Had that occurred, perhaps the goal does not go in and momentum shifts.
Second goal, Scuderi screened him. It was a great shot, but with an illegal stick, but he screened him.
I'll buy that. You're right, Tim. That's probably on Dumoulin more than anything, right?
I just looked at it again. It was Dumoulin just kept sagging back, and Hemsky gained the zone with complete ease. And then Perron was beaten to the point, as you pointed out, by Janmark. And Hemsky made a nice pass, and he shoveled it in.
But go back to the other end, too, before the goal.
Yeah, Bo Bennett missed by a mile.
Missed the net. This is what happens when you miss the net, when you're streaking in all alone. I'm sure he's trying to pick a corner. I mean, easy for me to say, but It's too often with him. Troy in Florida emails, Pens fans are in midseason form already, I can hear. It's just one game. Can we give them at least a month before we start ripping them apart? In regards to Joe Starkey's Pirates column today, guys, this team has fallen short in big moments the last 3 years, and I'm not talking about the wild card game, but in September. Also didn't realize how poorly Walker and Marte's postseason numbers were and that Kutch doesn't have a single RBI. I thought it was an interesting read from Starkey. Yeah, I mean, it's limited at bats here, too, if we're going to criticize one game of the Penguins, right? This is, I guess, you know, it's five games for these players, for Walker and McCutcheon going back to the Cardinals series. Are you ready to jump on McCutcheon for no RBIs in 3 years in the playoffs?
I've been doing it for a while now, and I think it's deserved. Much like Cole not living up to the tag as ace, McCutcheon, despite his batting average, hasn't lived up to the tag of one of the best in the game in the postseason.
Well, if they ran into two bulls, a.k.a. best aces in the game, then it's hard to fault them anybody for these last two games, right?
Okay, so we should go back in history and not fault Barry Bonds for failing against John Smoltz.
I'm just asking the question. That was 3 years of
series. That logic,
I mean, this is,
it's too easy. You're giving him too much of a break there.
The bigger the sample size, and it is true that, hey, a 5 or 7 game stretch in the middle of July where you go 2 for 25 gets absorbed into 500-600 plate appearances, and you know, but this is what guys are ultimately judged on. You know, Terry Bradshaw always said he wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame if he hadn't won the 4 Super. He's ultimately judged on what he did in championship. Everybody watching, and by the way, the TV ratings for Pirates-Cubs were an all-time wild card high. When everybody's watching and the bright lights are on. Not that you can't be a great performer, you know, 99% of your career, but you also have to judge in the – and it is, you know, now the first year, Walker, I don't think he had a hit in the Cardinals series.
0 for 19
yeah, okay.
in the playoffs.
All right, that's tough. That's tough. But that's one five-game series, really. You know, and if that was the only one that he ever got in and you want to judge him on that, I don't think it's fair. But when you
– Sorry, he was 2 for 5 against Cueto. He was 0 for 19 against
right,
the Cardinals.
Right, I said the Cardinals
series. You're right.
And so – You know, and he had the two hits in the Cueto game. So the one time that they won, he was a big part of it. The times that they lost, you can put a part of the blame on him. But Tim's
McCutcheon
right.
You
can't give him a hall pass because it's only 10 games. But at the same time, you can't judge their entire career because they didn't perform in the postseason.
McCutcheon, Tim, was 5 for 18 in the Cardinals series, .278 average, 2 runs scored. And he had 2 hits against Cueto in that game, 2 for 3.
And he came within a tenth of an inch of having the second biggest home run in Pirate history.
No, I don't. He had one hit.
Well, so did Carmelo Martinez. You know?
That wouldn't have won a deciding game, though.
No, right? That would have kept him alive. Would have kept him alive in Game 6. Hey, look, you know, he got on base on that ball up the middle that the shortstop couldn't field, but it went through my head as he was standing there against Arrieta. He wants to eliminate this tag of not doing enough in the postseason. This is where you scorch a double. This is where you knock one over the fence. This is where you single-handedly get the team back into it, and this is where you build your reputation as a postseason player as well as a good regular season player.
I mean, I think Starkey's right. The team is developing a bad big game rep like the Bengals. It's starting.
Is that not fair? Should he get his credentials ripped?
No, that's fair. I don't think the McCutcheon criticism is all that fair, though, based on those numbers. Not that Joe's saying that. Well, he's saying he's looking for his first ribby.
Well, I mean, come
you know,
on.
One week, RBIs don't mean anything. Sabermetrics tell you that you should look at these statistics, and now everybody wants to point at one statistic that he has no RBIs, which
right.
is a team statistic anyway. Look at the guys batting in front of him. How many times has he come? What is he with runners in scoring position? That might be a more accurate barometer. If he's 0 for 10, then he's failed.
Josh Taylor, get to work. What's McCutcheon?
Josh is the greatest, man. We throw out all this crap, and he his eyes spin in circles.
He grumbles throughout the whole show. It's awesome. Like, I can hear him in the background. Anything I say, he'll say something under his breath, muted, like,
That's not just him, Ken.
Well, I know, but he builds it up for noon, and then it explodes like Mount Vesuvius. But he also, Starkey points out Gerrit Cole in this 5.4 ERA in his 2 winner-go-home outings.
I don't think I'd ever want to go shopping with you, Ken, because I think you would impulse buy anything that you see that based on your reaction to things in sports. Oh, look, yellow yarn. I never saw that. I'm going to buy some.
I actually hate dollar stores. I hate that. I hate impulse buying. I'm like the most research guy. I'll comb through like Yelp ratings before I go to a restaurant. Oh, yeah. I'm very calculated.
I don't even know what Yelp ratings are.
That's my engineering background.
I just look and see if I have a coupon for two burgers for the price of one, and I go.
Yelp ratings come in handy to brace yourself for whatever discount hotel you're going to at the last minute. That's where Yelp ratings come in the most.
No, I like quality. I don't go discount.
Usually I don't. What I do is I'll go through the Yelp ratings, still go with the cheapest option humanly possible, and just brace myself for the smell of mold in my room doesn't flush.
I got to rent a car in San Diego for $11 a day, and it's an off-site place that I never heard. I have this feeling I'm going to be like in Tijuana, picking up a car that has two wheels.
You and Sally?
No, they're going a different day.
Really?
Me, yeah.
What a tough assignment, by the way. You to San Diego for multiple days. That's going to be fun. Come on.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, except for my flight's at 6:15 Sunday morning. And I go to Washington, D.C. for my layover.
What time will you arrive in Sandy?
San Diego time, 10:30.
Oh, I couldn't get the whole day.
We got all kind of stuff to shoot. It's a work day, my friend.
Sunday?
Absolutely.
Making you work the day before?
Absolutely.
God, I don't buy that. Jason of the Berg emails, I hope we see Clendenning over Scuderi Saturday, guys. They need to turn the page.
I agree.
Is Clendenning playing a game in the NHL? I don't know you want to be going NHL debut in game two after that.
In the home game. Got to get some of these guys in there. You can't leave guys sit around and...
Well, what do you mean after that, Ken?
Well, you're 0-1. I mean, it's not like... I didn't think the D was so bad, it's desperation mode. Or Scuderi. I heard Denny Potvin say once, he expects NHL defensemen 200 games before they know what the hell they're doing. Now, you got to get that at some point, but...
Well, he's got 17, so he's on his way.
Clendenning?
He's got 17 games with the Canucks. Okay.
All right. Well, maybe he knows what he's doing. I don't know. That's a risk to me, though. I'd scratch Dumoulin. If you're right, Tim, and the first goal is more Dumoulin than get him out of there.
Yeah, but Dumoulin is supposed to be playing for you for a while. They're just going through the motions with Scuderi now.
I'm telling you, it could get bad. You put too many young guys in there and rookies, it could be a lot worse than what we saw.
Well, it could also get better if you've got a good one. By that way of thinking, they never would have given Olli Maatta a shot.
Are you comparing Clendenning to Olli Maatta?
No, I'm not. But I'm saying I expected Olli Maatta someday to be a number one or number two defenseman. I'm expecting Adam Clendenning to be a decent four. You know, and the level of expectation is different. It's what are you getting from your bottom two defensemen? Maybe Clendenning can give you more than what Scuderi does.
Nick in Virginia says, ace is to MLB what elite is to NFL quarterback, guys.
That's a fair analogy. I think he's onto something there. It's a highly debated word choice is what it is. It's like, you know, we spend so much time tying our knots over this diction of whether or not that's a real word or a word that's being properly applied. We word police ourselves to death. Yeah. Over ace, elite, etc.
Yeah, that's a good email. Justin M., they should keep Melanson, guys. I don't know why they need to keep focusing on the dollar figures. If Melanson makes them a better team, then keep him. It's kind of true. I mean, this guy set a record for saves, and we're just accepting that Melanson's going to go, and they're going to trade him when they got a year left of control.
We're so used to it, and it's one thing that they've done effectively. That's why. They've very effectively
brainwashed this.
Well, they've also what's Hanrahan done since he left?
Yeah, been injured.
What about Grilly? What's Grilly done since he left?
Before that, what did Matt Capps do after he left?
Or Mike Williams?
I mean, I've said for many years now that the closer role is overrated. You have to have a good one, but you're asking a guy. It's not like they come in trouble. You're asking a guy to pitch a scoreless inning. Now, it's tough. I do believe that the final three outs are different than getting other three outs, but I don't think it is. I think if you gave Tony Watson the exact same opportunity this year as Melanson, I'll bet he has 48 saves.
Hmm. But three to less. Previous emailer, what about the eighth inning then?
Well, like I said, Soria. I mean, it's much cheaper to find a setup eighth inning person than it is to. I'm not saying we'll let him go either, and I don't like that mentality. But I also know that people complained about Melanson from the first day of the first week of the year about how shaky he was all the time.
How'd that work out?
Maybe Caminero emerges.
Now, all of a sudden, he got the job done. Hey, Caminero, that's not a bad thought.
That's a bad thought.
No,
Caminero is your closer?
Not as your closer, as your setup guy.
Oh, he scares me. He throws hard, but he gets hit hard. I don't know if I'm not really ready to count on him as my eighth inning.
Yeah,
guy.
I'm not. Look, I agree. You got a guy that had 51 saves for you and had the best season as a closer that anybody ever had here, if that's what you're using to judge it, and you're willing to just let him walk away. But at the same time, if you way overpay him, and he doesn't strike you as someone who's ready to implode a little bit at any time? Mm-hmm. I don't mean within any ballgame. What if it just suddenly caves in on him?
Yeah, I guess every closer's like that.
But he's had opportunities to pitch in key setup and closing roles before here, and he failed.
I know, but his stuff's so nasty when it's on. He's got four pitches, and they're all good. I mean, I don't think it's a fluke.
All things being equal, they can't just accept and let him go. They got to try to keep him,
or trade him for somebody like they did with Hanrahan. That's a good point.
There you go.
Right. They burn through closers. They take the mileage off their arms. They ship them off to other teams. They have a guy ready to go in the wings. That's one thing that I've liked about how the Pirates have approached things. To the emailer's point, I hate saying goodbye to an effective player just for the sake of cost. Yes. But I've always drawn the analogy between running backs and closers. You burn through them quick. You get two or three good years out of them. You move them somewhere else. You have somebody else ready to go.
But we're not saying sign them to an eight-year deal. This is a one-year $10 million gamble. It's not that outrageous for a guy that's really been good in extreme recent memory.
I feel this way, Ken. They have more options to replace Melanson than they do replacing Burnett and Happ, replacing two guys on the left side of the infield, three if you want to throw Gung into the mix for his injury. They have more answers to replace Melanson than they do for all the other holes that they're going to create for themselves because they're afraid of cost to keep those guys.
Hmm. All right, sportstalk@tribweb.com to email the program. This is the Morning Sports Report on Trib Live Radio. That's an hour plus commercial-free. We might get an hour commercial-free in the noon hour as well. Tim has a one-on-one with Andrew Conte, who penned a new Steelers book. That'll be part of it. Travis Sochik will be in studio at 12:40 today. We'll pick pork. So we've got a busy day coming up in the noon hour. On the way next, we have a quick check-in with West Virginia writer Keenan Cummings to give us some pick and pork knowledge for West Virginia Okie State. We've got to pick that game today, plus Penn State, Indiana, and Pitt, Virginia, with some interesting spreads. I think you're going to make those tough to select. Also, we'll pick the Bengals-Seattle game for the weekend. And we're brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand here in the Morning Sports Report. They've helped over 2 million pets and their owners enjoy more freedom, relaxing in their yards, not worrying about their dogs running away. Schedule a free in-home consultation at InvisibleFence.com. It's InvisibleFence.com. First 3-on-3 overtime in the NHL last night, too, guys. You missed this, we'll tell you how it went, and also talk to Keenan Cummings a little WVU Okie State on the way on Trib Live.
You already know that Invisible Fence Brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom, and expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at Duffy'sBeer.com and get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at Duffy'sBeer.com.